OpenServe is more than just SA's largest telecoms infrastructure provider. It's the answer to new ways of doing business. A connection to cutting-edge technology and infinite possibilities. A connection to tomorrow. Connect with us at openserve.co.za.
This episode of the Tech Central podcast is brought to you by Pinnacle, Africa's top ICT distribution business, delivering the exceptional every time. I'm Duncan McLeod, and you're listening to the Tech Central podcast. I'm on an internet call now with John von Techner, the co-founder of Vivaldi Technologies, the company behind the Vivaldi web browser. He's also co-founder of Norway's Opera Software and a former CEO of the company. Now, I'm particularly excited about having John on the podcast because I have been using the Vivaldi browser as my primary desktop browser for the past year or so now. And if you were listening to our Talk Central podcast last weekend, you'll know that I'm a big fan of the software. So, John, it's a pleasure to welcome you to the podcast. Thank you for making the time.
Thanks, Duncan. It's my pleasure.
So before we talk about the world of web browsers and the world of Vivaldi, please tell me a bit about yourself. You were born in Iceland. What was your upbringing like?
It was great. I mean, I lived close to Reykjavik in a small town called Seltjarnarnes. Mm-hmm. Actually walking distance downtown Reykjavik. I lived with my grandparents. I had a great time overall.
So you moved to Norway when you were quite young, and in fact, I think you studied, was it computer science in Oslo?
Yeah, I moved, so my father is Norwegian, and I moved to Norway to study at the University of Oslo, and I studied computer science there. Mm-hmm. I had a year in York as well. And yeah, I studied computer science with a gradual focus on user interface design. Yeah.
Okay. And you took a job at Telenor, which was then the Norwegian government-owned telecommunications operator. And it was there that you and a colleague started work on your first web browser called Multitorg Opera. This was in the early 1990s, right?
Yeah, I mean, we were very early with finding the web. So at the research lab where I was working, actually we had been building a word processor before. For a document format that was a standard that went nowhere, ODA. And then we were kind of looking at new technologies, and we came across the web in 1992. So this is way before. I think at the end of 93, there was about 100 websites in the world. So we were very, very, very early, and we started to work with the web technologies and building intranets before the term was actually used, made the first web page as an entry point for Norway. And then we decided, okay, we want to make a web browser, and this is still inside the research department. And after 6 months, we had a prototype, and there was then a decision what to do with it, because there was a six-month project inside Telenor to find if they wanted to do something with it. They didn't, so they allowed us to found Opera. Mm-hmm. As a company, and take the work that we had done up until that time and found the company.
Yeah. Now, I'm going to give away my age here by telling you that I remember using a browser called NCSA Mosaic. It was pre-Netscape. Was NCSA Mosaic the primary means that people were getting onto the web when you guys were starting out?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it wasn't there until a bit later, mm-hmm. more like 93. Okay. But I mean, so the initial phase, there was something called, the web, basically the browser that Tim Berners-Lee made. But we were using definitely Mosaic. We were using that for the work that we were doing internally. So that was the competition kind of when we were starting working on Vivaldi. The competition was Mosaic, and then eventually Netscape, and obviously Microsoft.
Yes, yes. Well, I want to talk about those sort of intervening years and how the browser has developed and how market shares have shifted. But Telenor abandoned the project, and you managed to secure the rights to the software, and you started co-founded Opera Software. Opera never gained a dominant following on desktop. That is certainly and probably still has a legion of fans. It has, of course, since garnered a huge user base on mobile, especially in developing countries and especially here in Africa. I'm interested, though, what determines whether a browser becomes popular or becomes even dominant? I mean, Netscape was deposed by Internet Explorer, possibly for anti-competitive reasons, critics might argue. And Internet Explorer has since been deposed by Google's Chrome. John, what in your view drives these changes in user choice?
Well, I think for the big players, a lot of the question has been around distribution and funding. If you look at how they've assessed them, if you look at, for example, the first there was Mosaic, and then Mosaic was, and they had like 90% of the market. Mm. And then they were replaced by Netscape. And Netscape was the continuation of Mosaic. It was the same people. It was a better browser. And it was massively funded. They went public on Nasdaq. They were then killed by Microsoft because Microsoft included a browser for free and actually made it impossible to get browser distribution. Mm-hmm. So you could see how the distribution and the funding was clear to this. I mean, in the case of Microsoft, they did by including the browser with the operating system and just about making it impossible for any other browser to get distribution, clearly they would take market share. It was more about that than the quality of the browser. For small companies like ours with Opera and the like, I mean, it was really a question of, okay, we don't have the distribution, so how can we get a market share? And the focus was just building a great browser for the end user and looking at ways to do it better. And I mean, we had very skilled programmers. We made the core from scratch, all the code from scratch. And we were able to build a piece of code that could run on anything. So we had the benefit that our code was adaptable to mobile phones. And so when the mobile phones started to require a browser, we were in a position that no one else was, because we had a browser that was actually good enough to compete on the desktop. And a lot of people preferred OS over the other browsers. But we could take the same code and make it run on mobile. And that was unique.
Yes.
And that allowed us to take market share. I mean, actually, on desktop even, we were big. I mean, just not always in the places like the U.S. or certain Western European countries. But actually, I mean, in particular, we were very big in Russia and Ukraine and Belarus. We were actually biggest browser in these three countries on the PC side. We were quite big in countries like Germany.
Yeah.
So we managed to get a lot of users in a number of countries, but on the mobile side, I mean, we took over the market.
Yes.
And we looked at what was the weakness. We had built a great browser, but it was a problem that the networks were so slow. So we built a client server solution in Opera Mini. And by doing that, we made browsing possible on fairly normal phones.
Yes.
And by doing that, we helped, I mean, I'm proud of that, that we helped a lot of people get online.
Yeah.
So we were dominating in Africa, we were dominating in India, we were dominating in Eastern Europe. We ended up getting to be number one also in South America. So we became quite big based on the fact that we had a really good piece of software.
Yeah, yeah. What causes certain markets to do well, whereas others don't? I mean, you talk about the desktop market share in Russia, for example, very small in the US, but very big in Russia. What drives that sort of adoption in particular regions?
Well, I remember the first time I went to Russia, because I was asking people what happened. Because we were there and we had a 10% market share, and we were just trying to understand, so how did this happen? And I think in reality, there was a group of people that were spreading the gospel about us. They really liked us, and they were telling their friends, and they were giving support. So even though we were not really doing anything particular in Russia at the time, we had a lot of support from users that liked what we were doing. And I think there were certain things. I mean, technically speaking, for example, we were much more efficient when it comes to caching.
Mm-hmm.
So what that meant is that, for example, you would go to a site and then you'd read an article and you'd go back, and all the other browsers, they would reload the page.
Right.
In our case, we would keep it in memory and we wouldn't load the page again. So we were much more efficient. And the combination of, okay, slower connections, actually paying per megabyte, and a much more efficient caching mechanism that we had. And in addition to that, the community that spread the word, because the other conditions, they were there in a lot of other countries without us getting market share. So I think the last remaining piece was a number of users liking our product and telling their friends, and it just spread because they felt we were a much better solution. So I remember going to Russia and going to conferences and visiting universities, and I would always do this thing, okay, how many of you are using Opera? And typically in a crowd, almost anywhere, there would be a fair amount of people using Opera.
Yeah.
But in Russia, it's like 95% of the people that were in the room. Obviously, there would be more people using Opera that would show up, but still, it's rather unique.
Sure. And I'm sure that word of mouth sort of marketing is something you hope is going to drive adoption of Vivaldi as well. But before we get to Vivaldi, I just want to maybe spend a moment or two on Microsoft, because I know you have voiced some criticism of the company in the recent past, specifically around its efforts to make it difficult for Windows 10 users to switch default browsers away from the Microsoft Edge browser. Now, we know what happened back in the 1990s, or I think it might have been the early 2000s with the various antitrust investigations. In your view, John, is Microsoft engaging in similar practices again?
Yeah, I think they always have. I mean, obviously they did this during the time that they were killing Netscape, and as a side of consequence, there were problems for us as well. And I mean, there was the kind of things that they've engaged in, it's always been there. And the reality, it's kind of like, okay, you visit a Microsoft site, and I mean, we experienced like at Opera that they would put text on top of text if it was Opera. Or they would tell you to switch browser. We had some pretty interesting discussions with them on this. I mean, where they, for example, it was the MSN site, which was an important site at the time.
Yeah.
And they would block our users, and then there was press asking them, so why did they do that? And they said, because we didn't support certain web standards. The only problem was that we supported those web standards and they didn't. So we wrote a press release in that web standard, which again displayed in Opera and didn't display in IE. It was just their marketing people should have checked their information before going out and claiming things like that, because we were, when it came to standards, we were better than anyone else.
Right.
And then, I mean, there was the case where they put text on top of text, and we answered that with a special version of Opera that, if you went to MSN, would turn everything that was written there into gibberish. So we had a bit of fun with that, but the reality is Microsoft has always sadly had this, and I've tried to talk to them about changing that at the highest level, and I got a no.
Interesting. I mean, the perception is that Microsoft has changed as an organization. It's got a new CEO, Satya Nadella. It seems to have embraced open source much more warmly than certainly it did under the stewardship of Steve Ballmer. But on the web browser side, you think they're still up to the old tricks?
Well, you know, I remember the old days, right? I've been around for a long time on the web, and I also remember when they were claiming to embrace the web,
yep,
right? And open web standards. And they were actually doing better than Netscape, so I'll give them that. But the reality, at the same time, they were also patenting things inside the web standards. So they were introducing things like ActiveX and the like, which was undermining web standards.
Yeah.
So they had the plan that was called Embrace, Extend, Extinguish.
Yes.
And I don't know. I mean, I have to admit that when I look at what they're doing with Linux and the like, I'm thinking, okay, are they up to the same, or what is happening here?
Interesting. What do you think of Google? I mean, are they certainly, if I visit Gmail or any other Google web property in a non-Chrome browser, I get the message saying, try Chrome. You should be using Chrome. It's the best experience. Do you think they're engaged in similarly troublesome behavior that got Microsoft in trouble all those years ago?
Yeah, sadly, Google is also engaging in kind of that kind of behavior. And the reality, for example, even for us, I mean, we have Vivaldi that is based on Chromium, and we have to identify as Chromium and remove any link to Vivaldi in our user agent. Mm-hmm. So how we identify ourselves when we are visiting pages. If we didn't, they would tell you to switch browsers because saying that our browser wouldn't be good enough. And that's clearly something that you don't want to happen. And there is no reason to. We're based on the same code as they are. So when you're visiting those sites, things do work.
Yes.
But this is something we engage with Google on with the same thing with Opera. We didn't do it as publicly, given that we actually had a business relations with Google. But I had many, many meetings with the highest level of Google about that they were actually blocking us from services at Opera, even though we were a partner, and they're clearly doing the same as with Vivaldi. We have experienced a case where they also have closed down our AdWords account.
Good grief.
For seemingly no reason. I mean, the only thing that we could see, there was a link that a few days before I actually said some words about what Google was doing with collection of data. And then a few days after that, they closed their account, and there was actually no real reason for them to do so. Took us like 3 months to reopen it. I mean, it's not like we are driven by... I mean, ads is luckily not a big part of our distribution.
Yeah.
But we had been trying out Google Ads and playing around with it, and suddenly the account was closed. And that happened twice, and the second time was a few days after I had commented on their information collection and targeting.
Interesting. So I think this probably leads quite nicely into the next question, which is around your revenue model. I know a lot of web browsers, historically, the revenue model has been based around including a search engine or a default search engine in the browser, and then the search engine paying the browser developer for that prime real estate inside the browser. Is that the same revenue model that Vivaldi is following?
Yeah, basically, it's a nice revenue model because, yes, we do include a search engine. Actually, we include a few. That's from a user's perspective, that's useful to have in there. You would expect there to be a search engine built in. So we do that. And actually, we were the first browser to do that at Opera.
Yes.
So we created that business model in many ways. So we're doing that. The search is integrated, and that generates the revenue that we have, combined with we have some bookmarks, some of which generate revenue for us. Things like eBay, Booking.com, and things like that. The revenue we're getting per user per year is not a lot. We're talking about a dollar.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as we get enough users, it's a model that works nicely. And we can just focus on building the best possible browser. And then as long as people are using, on average, some of those services that we have, we get our dollar and we are happy.
I noticed recently that I think a few months ago you started making DuckDuckGo, the privacy-focused search engine, your default in private browser windows. Is that a commercial arrangement?
It is a commercial arrangement, but I have to admit I'm also a big fan of DuckDuckGo and the principle that they follow. I mean, I do think that there's too much collection of information on the users, and I do like the fact that they don't do that.
Yeah, yeah. And privacy, I have noticed, is a key focus of Vivaldi's in the recently introduced Vivaldi Sync feature, which I'm very glad to see has finally arrived in the browser in version 2.0. I see that your data that is synced is fully encrypted, and that Vivaldi has no sight of users' data. So you guys are very, very much privacy orientated.
Yes, I mean, I think that's really important. And I mean, for me, looking at what's happening on the web, this is a big deal for us. I mean, what's happening with the collection of information, I think it's wrong. So the first and most important thing for us is not to engage in that. So we are not collecting information on our users, and we go out of our way not to do that. And then we try to select partners that share our values. And then we look at any other ways that we can do to keep the user safe. But I mean, clearly, this not building a profile on the user, not online, not on your machine, just not at all.
So, John, let's step back in time a little bit and look at your decision to step down as CEO of Opera back in 2010. I think you remained on as a strategic advisor for another 18 months or so, but then you left the company entirely. I mean, that was a big part of your life. What motivated your decision to step away from Opera?
I mean, there had been an ongoing discussion for actually years and years where I wanted to build Opera, and we had a group of people that wanted to sell the company. So we were already public, and in some ways, the way I had thought it always, I got investors in for the first time in 2000. And this is, again, 5 years after the company was founded, and during that time period, I mean, Netscape came and went, right?
Yeah.
So we were in a situation where, okay, we got the investors in. We have to provide an exit for them. We provided the exit by going public. But then there was always a group of people that thought, okay, you're going to fail eventually, so better sell before it's too late. And that's kind of something, it's a battle that was always there, and they just wanted to sell the company. And I guess I got tired of the fighting. And I decided, okay, I can't continue, because it was also impacting people around me. So I decided, okay, I'll stop fighting, I'll step aside, and hopefully, I mean, someone else will get a better chance of running the company. I mean, in reality, we were doing really well as a company. We were doing 40 to 50% revenue growth every year. We were increasingly profitable. So it's not really that we were not doing well as a company, but they did want to, they always believed that if we put us up for sale, there would be a massive amount of companies trying to bid on the company, and that would create a better shareholder value. I disagreed with that, but anyway, that's kind of what led to me quitting. And then, I mean, the process of trying to sell the company was something that was ongoing. And I mean, eventually they sold the browser business to a Chinese consortium a couple of years ago. So that's kind of the process that the company went through. I'm obviously saddened to see what happened to the company, because I think Opera could have done a lot more. And now it's kind of in a different place.
Yeah. I mean, it must have been quite emotional. I mean, this was your baby, right, in many respects. It must have been quite difficult and quite an emotional thing to step away from it.
It was a difficult thing to do. And, I mean, in some ways, what made it even more difficult was what happened after, because they were firing a lot of people. Totally unnecessarily, because the company, as I told you, was profitable and had a lot of opportunities. And again, the money was spent buying advertisement companies, which so far has proven to be a really bad investment. So it would have been much better for them to continue investing in the browser company. But it's the decisions that they made, and it was hard to see that. And I mean, in some ways, that was one of the reasons why I decided to kind of leave the country. I mean, I was living in Norway at the time.
Yeah.
And basically seeing what was happening at Opera, and basically everywhere I went, there would be people wanting to discuss that with me. and employees crying on my shoulder and the like. And it was difficult, and I needed to start afresh. So my thinking was, okay, I now have the chance to go and live anywhere in the world I can. And I actually spent 6 months evaluating my options, and I ended up moving to the East Coast. I mean, I did evaluate moving to the UK. I evaluated France. I evaluated moving back to Iceland. But I ended up, okay, thinking it would be interesting and provide us a fair amount of opportunities to be somewhere close to MIT and kind of all the kind of innovative community on the East Coast. So that would be an interesting change of scenery for me. So at this time, I mean, I was thinking, okay, I'm done with browsers. It was a lot of fun. I hope Opera will kind of do well as a company. Even after I've left the company, I wish the people well. There was a lot of my friends at the company. So that's really sincerely what I wanted. So I moved to the U.S. to start afresh. Well, I mean, what I was doing at the time was testing out, okay, I wasn't really thinking of starting another company. I was investing in startups.
Yeah.
And I promised myself I would be a better investor than the investors that I had had, some of them. So I started to invest in startups. I'm supporting startups in Norway, in Iceland. I did one investment in the US as well, but mostly I focus on Norway and Iceland. And it was a way for me to kind of be around the startup community and supporting a lot of really exciting companies, but at the same time stepping away a little bit myself.
So Vivaldi didn't actually start as a web browser project, as I understand it. It was started as a social community type of website where people could share, have discussions and share photos and that sort of thing. What was the thinking behind this project initially, and when and why did it morph into a plan to build a new web browser?
Actually, the browser plan was there.
It was there, okay.
The point of doing the community site was basically, I mean, a lot of the things that Opera was doing a couple of years after I left, I mean, things continued in a bad direction, and then it became really bad, right? Hmm. And there were decisions made by Opera, which was to basically throw away all the code and all the work that we had done and start afresh, and with a different design philosophy. At the same time, they killed the community site. Mm-hmm. And I felt kind of responsibility over those users that had helped us grow the company. I mean, they had helped us grow the user base of Opera to 350 million active users. And seemingly, the Opera management was just thinking, okay, we don't care about those users, so we'll just throw it all away. And that included the community side, where there was a lot of really active users and people that were helping us spread the word, but also just it was a place for people to hang out. So the first thing we did while thinking was, okay, we can throw up a community side fairly quickly. That remained to be a lot harder than we thought. but we did make the community side. And then at the same time, we started working on the browser, and we went actually to quite a few rounds with how we were going to do the browser. It took us a long time to decide on the technical solution for it. Mm-hmm. But the point of the community side, we believe that those things go hand in hand, because the kind of browser we are building is a community-related browser. It's very tightly integrated into the community, meaning the feedback we get, we listen to our users, we want to see every individual user and give them exactly what they want. Mm-hmm. So part of that is this very tight communication with the end users. And we have quite a lot of people that are volunteering for us. We have hundreds of people that are volunteering, either translation or helping us test and helping us going through bugs and things like that. And these are highly talented people that are giving their time to help us. And we are extremely thankful for that. And that's one of the, I mean, we had that at Opera as well. And all of that was killed because they were just looking at the community as a cost base and wanted to do a profit and loss on it separately. And we were never really making any money off the community, while I saw the community as the support function of the browser, and that any serious company, I mean, my thinking has always been, you want to engage with your users, and that's what we want to do. We don't want to outsource it to a Facebook or something like that. We want to do it ourselves. And we want to be very close to our users. And that's how we were thinking things at Opera during my time there. And that's how we are thinking about things at Vivaldi. I mean, we really want to do the best for our users. We want to get their feedback. We want to hear what they like and what they don't like. And we want to continue improving the browser for them.
How big is the team? Did you bring a lot of developers across from Opera?
I mean, we've been gradually growing. I guess the team is now up to a bit more than 40, 44, I believe. Now, only about half of those are developers, because actually for an organization like Vivaldi, we need a lot of other things. We need testers. We need people to work on our sites, because we are clearly providing a lot of services, both the community site and sync and just our overall structures. We have some people that work with the community, and we are actually pretty heavy on HR as well, which is trying to take as well care of our employees as possible. So we have a bigger organization. We are not just a pure group of programmers, but obviously we are a very technical company. There's not there's not a lot of salespeople in our organization. I think you can count them as one or two that are working on that. Given that, those are the people that do the deals with the like of search engines and the like.
Are the teams fairly geographically dispersed, or do you have one central location where you will work from?
So we're distributed, but we try to keep people in the same location. So the biggest team is in Norway. And then we have a fairly big team in Iceland. Mm-hmm. And then we have a few people here and there. You mentioned people coming from Opera, and there's a lot of people that are coming from Opera. I'm really proud of that because both the employees, they really want to work with together. And there was a really strong camaraderie in kind of Opera. And so a lot of people are coming from Opera. And the same applies to volunteers and obviously a fair amount of users, although there's a lot of users coming from other browsers. But in general, there's a number of people that were like volunteering for Opera, and they just switched the day we came out.
Wow. Okay. Well, John, here's your opportunity to do a 60-second elevator pitch. Why is Vivaldi different, and why should people use it?
Vivaldi is a different browser from the perspective that we put your requirements first. We are not driven by the business model. We are driven by whatever you need. And I think the more you are using the web, the more useful we become. But even for the people that are maybe not so advanced, they will find useful features in Vivaldi. The norm now in many ways is that you have the different browsers, they look at what people are using and they remove any functionality that isn't getting widespread use. We don't track what you're doing, so we don't have that information, and we don't want it. We'll just take your word for it for what you want, and we provide different ways to do different things. And by doing that, we are finding that our users are able, after learning a few tricks, the browser just feels natural for them because there is the way that they want to do things. Keyboard users will use keyboards. Mouse gesture users will use mouse gestures. The functionality, we try to obviously not overload, but there is the functionality is there. Things like zooming is easily accessible. We've added functionality, things like being able to take screenshots or notes and things like that, just make it easily accessible to the user. And there's a lot of functionality like that that you find, okay, you're using the browser and you're thinking, okay, I wish I could do this. And most of the time, probably Vivaldi can already, and if not, let us know and we'll fix it.
Yeah. Yeah, I've been a user of Vivaldi for about a year now, really enjoying version 2.0. Love the ability to be able to customize the browser in a great deal of detail. Also enjoy tab stacking, where you can have multiple tabs on top of a tab, which I think some people might think is a bit of overkill, but I find it quite useful. The shortcuts as well, of course. I believe you've integrated RSS into the version 2 as well. I haven't had a chance to play with that yet, but it's something I've been looking forward to.
Actually, it's not into 2.0.
Oh, is it not?
It's something. Okay. No, it's something that we're working on. And it was in I guess it's some people saw that there were some settings about it, and then we removed them.
Okay, but, that must be what
but,
I saw.
But we are. But we are working on it, and this is also part of our mail project. Where we're building an email client and the like. We are doing a lot of things that you don't find in other browsers. We see the browser as the tool that you use to do most everything on the internet. And there are certain things we think is useful to have built in. And a number of us, for example, that use email extensively, and there's quite a lot of us that still do that. Having that built in is very useful. I've been using the mail client in Vivaldi now for a really long time. Mm-hmm. It is quite good, but it's not ready to go out there.
So is it integrated into the browser? It's not a separate mail client that you're developing?
It's integrated.
Interesting.
Which has a lot of benefits. It's a question of just you're in that workflow. So having the browser and the mailer inside one is very natural. But the way we work with the mail allows you to work with vast amounts of data, multiple accounts and the like. So it's a really useful functionality, and I look forward to showing that. And also RSS. I mean, for us, RSS is the clean thing. You're getting things based on your requirements and your needs instead of someone monitoring what you're doing and giving you what they think you want.
Yes.
So it's a different approach, and it is something that we look at. Okay, how can we provide functionality that people want? And again, these are highly requested. Mm. When we added Sync now in 2.0, it was the most requested feature in Vivaldi.
Yes, that was my top feature as well.
And then we have, I mean, people are patiently or impatiently waiting for mail, and and we have seen that a lot of people want RSS as well. So, and basically feeds, so we have it working internally, but it still requires time before it's ready to be shown to the public.
When do you think the email version will be released? Is it a 2018 time frame or sometime next year instead?
You know, I think the clear answer there is when it's ready. it really is that simple, because we're working on getting that functionality in, and we want it to be good enough. I mean, I've been using it as my primary mailer for a really long time now, and I wouldn't switch it with anything else. Mm-hmm. But there are still bugs and the like that I, as a technical user, can deal with, but not everyone else would like that. So especially with email, you don't want to mess up people's emails, and that's something that we want to work really well. So it still has a ways to go, but the general principle of the mailer is really good, in my humble opinion.
Sure. Will it work with just your typical POP IMAP type services, or will it have full integration with Microsoft Exchange services as well?
No, the focus is things like IMAP and POP and the like. That's really our focus, the open standards.
Okay. So, John, I wanted to ask, and maybe this is a little bit of a technical question, but you built Vivaldi on top of Chromium, which is obviously the open source underpinnings of Google's Chrome and other projects. Why did you choose Chromium?
I mean, the choices that we had in many ways was either Chromium or using the Firefox code, and we evaluated that. We knew that Firefox was going to go through a fairly significant rewrite, and that was a concern for us at the time, because building on top of a moving target is really hard. I mean, it's really hard with Chromium as well, because Chromium is a moving target as well.
Sure.
But we felt that it was a bigger risk to go and do that based on Firefox. And our impression was everyone else was going with Chromium, and we didn't want to take a risk there with this kind of project.
And it didn't make sense to try and build something from the ground up?
No, I mean, obviously we've done that before.
Yeah.
And we know how much resources it requires. At Opera, we had 100 people working on Presto, team that worked on Presto. And after I left, a big discussion while I was there as an advisor was the fact that they were kind of cutting down on that because they didn't want to continue to increase that team. I believe we should have, at Opera, grown that team to 110, 120, 130 just to kind of with the growth of the browser. So given that you would need, say, 130 or 150 to maintain the core, and then you have to write it first. So if you do the calculation, that's just not an option for us at all. So we did what Google did and what Apple did.
Yeah.
And what Opera has done as well, which is to base off someone else's work. I mean, Chromium is based off WebKit, which is from Apple, which is based off the KHTML project, a Linux project. Mm-hmm. So when companies like Apple and Google decide that they can't do it from scratch, I guess we can't do it again.
Sure. We've done it before. Asking for punishment.
Yeah,
punished.
Yeah, we've done it before, and obviously, I mean, there were things that I feel that we did better. I mean, we had a piece of code that was extremely scalable and the like, but it would just take too long to do that, and it is really, really, really hard.
So version 2 has been out how long now? About a week, week and a half?
Well, a few days, basically.
A few days. What's the reception been like so far?
Fantastic. I mean, we're getting great reviews and great feedback, and the users everyone seems to be happy, so it's great. I mean, obviously, there's always someone that finds a bug or something, and we'll have updates for that. But overall, it's looked really good. There's not a lot of complaints. Generally, people are very excited about what we are doing, and clearly, there's a lot of people that hadn't heard about us before, and they heard about us now.
Right. Oh, that sounds great. And in terms of market share, are you able to accurately measure that? What is your global market share look like? And how many users do you see Vivaldi realistically attracting over time?
I mean, our market, we have a lot of room to grow. I think that's the positive thing here.
Yeah.
I mean, we have about a million users or thereabout at this time, active. The active user base is kind of what is the important part.
Yeah.
I don't really see a limit to how far we can take this. I mean, we did this with Opera. We started in one little corner and gradually we grew. It took us a long time to get to 100 million users, and then shortly afterwards we were at 350 million.
Yeah.
Because it's kind of an exponential growth. And what that means, it doesn't mean that you're doubling or tripling every year, but it means that you're having a percentual growth and you're having a significant growth. And I don't know how far we can take this. We don't need to have, 10% market share to be a viable company. We just need a little bit more than what we have today. And I think we are making very good progress on that. So we're not really going out with that we need this or that. Obviously, we're trying to get as many users as we can. And hopefully a lot of people just like what we do, and we'll gradually get there through word of mouth and great articles.
John, last question before I let you go. Any plans for a mobile version? And if so, what would you bring to mobile to make the experience richer?
Yeah, clearly, I mean, mobile is a focus. I'm actually using Vivaldi on mobile, to be frank.
Okay.
But it is a really early version. It's taken more time than we would have liked it to do. There's a lot of demands for us on mobile. I think the same philosophy is what you can expect on mobile. The philosophy of putting the user requirements first, the focus on diversity and difference needs. I mean, that people want different things. They have different size phones. They have different requirements with regards to font sizes and things like that. And you can range from having relatively small screens to having screens that are, being projected onto the wall, right?
Yeah.
So there's differences in user interface designs for the different ones. And our thinking is that we should adapt to your requirements and not just build a browser that can do that works on only one size of devices, but that is flexible. And probably in particular focusing on slightly larger screens and people that are and people are getting with larger and larger screens and utilizing their phones more and more like a computer, so having richer functionality is what we aim to have over time.
Sounds good. I look forward to seeing that when it eventually comes out. John von Techner is co-founder and CEO of Vivaldi Technologies. It's been an absolute pleasure having you on the Tech Central podcast, and thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you, Duncan.